Blog Talk Radio.
United the Sunday night, a week before Christmas, and the holiday season is packed and on fire. Just like
at least for us it is. Not so much for the, it sounds like, the American movie-going audience, or according to box office reports. But it is. I like what you wrote in the chat room. That's hilarious. Holidays and Tebow. That's classic.
Yeah.
That's classic. That's
what the season's all about this
year.
Yeah,
man.
I mean, I've got the game on TV on mute right now, so I'm going to look over occasionally, and he's just a phenomenon.
Yes, he is. Yes.
If you care about football, but not everyone out there does.
I do. Well, the Redskins won today. That was incredible. I don't know what happened. I don't know what that changed. They beat the Giants, so I have no idea how that happened today.
But, wow.
Yeah, I know. I really care about watching the Redskins. But hopefully the Ravens, I hope the Ravens are kicking the Chargers' ass. Okay, but besides that, we have a lot to talk about, not just the Globes, but between the two of us, we've seen a lot of movies. We have seen two films, Sherlock Holmes and Mission Impossible, and I think we need to talk about both of those.
Yeah. Two great action films.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Open at the same time, and you think that they, you know, will there be room for both? Sherlock Holmes, I mean, box office, I think, is up 75% from last weekend, but last weekend was the lowest in years.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't hard, but it didn't open as big as they had hoped.
Yeah, I know. And there's an interesting interesting thing that happened. You would think, because it's Warner Brothers, they would put the prologue for The Dark Knight in front of that film. And Paramount got it because of the IMAX with Mission Impossible. So I'm just like,
right.
what were you guys thinking? I mean,
but they did put a trailer on Sherlock Holmes.
Oh
right?
Yes, and that was, I did not expect that.
I haven't seen that trailer yet.
Oh, okay. Wait, they didn't. Wait, you didn't see that?
No,
they only showed you the prologue.
No. The screening, they just showed the movie. There wasn't anything ahead of it. And then we had to go to another place, like an official IMAX theater, to go see the prologue right afterwards.
Oh, okay.
So we made a special trip. I mean, everyone, a lot of people made a special trip, but we drove an hour out of town and to see that 6-minute prologue.
Wow. Okay, that's interesting because, like, I knew ahead of time when we saw Mission Impossible last night that we weren't going to get the prologue. I knew that because we weren't on the list. And that's not the first time that's happened, but I sort of knew that. Before we talk about anything else, I want to hear about the prologue. I want to hear your thoughts.
Oh, so have you not seen it yet? Or?
No, they didn't show it at our theater. It's not on every IMAX. It's not.
IMAX, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be true, like 70-millimeter IMAX, and I think they retrofit some theaters, and it's not a true IMAX experience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, it was crowded when we went, as I'm sure it was around the country, but
right.
Overwhelmingly male. And my friend made mention of this, and I said, I think, you know, women will go see the movie when it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I mean, The Dark Knight wasn't such a huge success because only guys saw it.
Yeah,
you know?
Everybody
went to see it. But when you're talking about, like, driving out of your way, going to a movie theater at 10 o'clock at night to see 6 minutes of footage.
Right.
It's a fanboy thing.
Oh,
know?
Yeah. Oh, totally.
But it was, first of all, with IMAX, I understand the appeal of it to mm-hmm. kind of the immersive part of it, that to bring people back into the theater and make it the biggest experience possible. I don't like it because there's only one good seat when you see an IMAX, mm-hmm. and that's the very back row. Because
true
IMAX, I mean, it completely surrounds you, where your eye cannot possibly take in everything that's in that frame.
Right.
You're constantly kind of scanning, moving your head from left to right to catch everything.
Mm-hmm.
So if you sit too close, you're not going to see anything. You know, it's like looking at a pixel in a
right. mm-hmm.
a single pixel on your TV.
True.
Now, if you recall, they did this with The Dark Knight the last time, and they played the prologue to that.
Mm-hmm.
That prologue was beautiful because it had a beginning, middle, and end.
Mm-hmm.
He robbed a bank. He was successful. He got away.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't need to know why he robbed the bank. It worked beautifully, almost mm-hmm. as its own kind of short film. This, for me, did not. I have no doubt that it's going to be great within the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But as a prologue standing on its own, like the last one did, it did not do that for me. I was completely confused. I had no idea what I was seeing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They board a plane, like three hooded people board a plane,
mm-hmm.
and they're interrogated. They're looking for Bane, and Bane is one of the three underneath the hood. Why they didn't just remove their hood so they could tell who was who, if Bane was among them, I don't know. But they go through that whole thing. Bane kicks some ass in the airplane, and
mm-hmm.
and another airplane comes by, and reconnaissance kind of latches on to their prisoner plane and rescues Bane.
Okay.
And then it ends. But it looks like it's so kind of truncated and cut up and spliced just within that prologue that I didn't know what was happening. I had dozens of questions that I just didn't understand.
Right, okay.
And you cannot understand what Bane says.
You can barely in the trailer. It's hard to make out completely what he says. I will say this. It sounds like the trailer was a smarter move to sell the movie. Because there are a couple people who weren't crazy about, from what I can tell, the prologue.
Well, there's one reason for them to do the prologue in IMAX. I think Christopher Nolan admitted this the night before when he spoke before it in L.A. He said, I just want to show off true IMAX to the masses.
Mm-hmm.
To get them hyped about the format. For that, yeah, I can agree with that.
Okay.
But as a standalone prologue, it didn't work. And another person said, well, it shouldn't work as a standalone. And I don't know about it. Well, the last one did, and that's what made me so excited about
mm-hmm.
it.
Right.
I mean, why not just play a trailer? You know,
and the trailer I did not expect. I had no idea we were going to see a trailer in front of Sherlock Holmes for that. I was under the impression, because I didn't see anything online. I love that they have not put this online, and someone did put it, the rap put it online today, and the studio asked them to take it off.
Yeah. I tell you what, Chris Nolan's good at the secretive stuff.
Yeah. And he's made something here, just judging from the trailer. What I like about this series, what I like what he's done, more so than anyone else has done, is this really, these are not, and I love comic book movies, I love them, I think they're awesome, I love them. This is not a comic book movie series. Yes,
right.
The guy has it dressed us up as a batter, but they're really, he has made them so, how should we say, immersed in the real world.
Yeah.
I can't get over how he's done it, but you definitely get that from this trailer, how he ties it in to a lot of things that are going on right now. And I was like, you know, I watched it again last night before Mission Impossible, and it's like, wow. I mean, he's really made something here. I have a feeling it will be very good, but I'm just very curious. I just can't wait to see it.
I'm sure it will be. The big question mark for me is Catwoman. I mean, how you...
You're not the only one. Everyone. I know people who think that this is the worst decision in many years, casting-wise. People do not buy her as Catwoman, Anne Hathaway.
Well, but for me with Catwoman, how do you put that in and not make it cheesy, not make it campy? I mean, how do you like you just described? How do you immerse that in a kind of a real world?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you do it. It's that's the big question mark. That's the thing that's hovering up. Bane, it looks like, works. Bane, it looks like he's managed to make it anything unlike the Batman and Robin film, and he's managed to actually make it work. But Catwoman is the big question mark. So,
yeah.
Who knows?
Well, the I guess the question with Mission Impossible, Mission Impossible did phenomenally well this
mm-hmm.
weekend. It's only on 425 screens. Came in third place per theater average of something like $31,000.
It's incredible. The theater average is incredible. I mean,
yeah. So the question is, how much of that was The Dark Knight?
It's possible,
I think people stuck around and enjoyed the film.
I have to say, I think it's really the best. It's my favorite. It's just so action packed. It delivers the goods, and it's very. It just, you don't get a really chance to breathe in the movie. I mean, it's nonstop.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it, and I hope that I hope they'll make another one. I think Brad Bird did a phenomenal job, and I thought everyone, especially Simon Pegg, really, just really incredible work on everybody's part.
It is great.
Yeah,
and it's the closest to the first one for me.
Mm-hmm.
At least in spirit.
Right.
Because what you love about the movies, or the idea of the movies, is that they're this group of characters, covert agents, doing truly impossible things. I mean, they're given an impossible task. I mean, it's right there, Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
And that spirit was kind of missing from the second and third in a way for
me.
Yeah,
the second and third one. I mean, the third one I thought had its moments.
Right.
But not, you know, this one definitely, I mean, just the building, him climbing the building alone is
that
worth
is
the
action,
price of
that,
admission.
Yeah, that is the action sequence of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is the most thrilling thing you'll see mm-hmm. on screen this year.
I love when he sees the glove again.
Yeah.
You know, he's losing, he sees it, and it's just, whatever.
Well, that's an example, too, of, that's why the action's so good in this. Because they're constantly raising the stakes, and even in that single scene,
mm-hmm.
as if him being up on that building trying to climb up to get to another floor from the outside
right.
is not enough, they constantly kind of raise the stakes within that, and his sticky gloves start to malfunction, and
yeah,
oh, it's just great, and I don't think Tom Cruise is given enough credit. I mean, he carries the movie; he is the movie's anchor.
Mm-hmm. No, he does a very good job.
And the reason why we're wowed by the movie is because of him.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this, I don't know, there's this feeling about Tom Cruise that he's nuts and whatever. He very well might be. But he still makes movies that are as good and as exciting as he made before we thought he went nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with that. You know, I could care less if he's nuts or not. That's not what I'm paying to see or what I'm doing.
But you know that there are a lot of people that feel otherwise.
Oh, well, this is this now brings us, you know, there are a lot of people who, you know, Jack Reacher for those Lee Child books think he is miscast. But I started naming other actors, and it's not just him. It just seems like there's no one alive today who can play this Jack Reacher character, suppose. I mean, because he, just because of his build and everything, I think just give Cruise a shot, let him do it, and see what happens. I mean, just give him a shot at least. No pun intended, but
one shot. Yeah.
Yeah. No, just let him. I mean, just, there are people though who it's really incredible. Really, I was talking to one of my friends at the gym, and they just, I hope that Mission Impossible film fails. I'm like, you know, okay. I mean, why? I mean, he just. I mean, if anything, the only thing he hurt was Oprah's sofa. I mean, you know. I mean, let's not. You know. I
don't get it.
I don't. That's the one I really don't get. Yeah.
I mean, Mission Impossible is not a Scientology movie.
No, it's not. Not
so,
at all.
I mean, but there might. Oh my God, I'm about to choke.
Okay, well, don't choke.
I'm gonna take a drink. Okay, God.
Okay, but I mean, I mean, he's not my favorite person.
I'm having
a Mission
Impossible to try to breathe. Yeah, he runs a lot.
I mean, the War of the Worlds and this, how much running do you think he does in between the two movies? I mean, he's just running constantly.
And he's a determined runner, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you see that look on his face.
Yeah.
Like, it is a great movie, and it's got such inventive kind of action sequences too, and it has a good, great sense of fun to it. I mean, it's alive, and the fact that you know that Tom Cruise was really on the outside of that building,
it does
something to that scene that you know that it was really him.
Mm-hmm.
It really does, because I'm sure you could do something CG with that and maybe not even be able to tell. But the knowledge that he really did that intensifies that scene so much.
Yeah, no. I was really impressed with the whole thing. Just the whole film was like really entertaining, just from beginning to end.
And I like Sherlock Holmes. I know a lot of people were bad on that as well, but I didn't see the first, but I understand it's better than the first.
It is. It is better than the first one. It's a lot of fun. I mean, it's another case where they look like they had a good time making it, but it is. I think the key to that movie, though, is the chemistry between Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law. I really do.
Yeah.
And I thought they do a great job together. And I thought this, and I... Oh, God, what's the guy who played Moriarty? What's his name? I always forget his name from Mad Men.
Yeah, I forget it, too. Justin Harris or Jacob?
Jared Harris. He was very good. I thought he was a very good Moriarty, and I just thought it was very enjoyable. I really did.
I thought it was, too. And the two elements that made it work for me, just like you said, the relationship between he and Jude Law, it's playful. I mean, you can tell they really, really enjoy each other in real life, too, and they are. I mean, they're best buds in real life now. But also a worthy villain, like a worthy opponent for Holmes on an intellectual level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's very telling that it climaxes in a true, like, battle of wits.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, they're
but
sitting
it,
around a chess table. They're not they're not walking away, trying to outrun a cannonball or something.
Yeah.
Like that. And that's the climax of the movie. I thought it was very inventive.
Yeah, I did too. I did it. I enjoyed that. And I liked it better than the first one. Even though, I mean, the first one I think is a good movie. Don't get me wrong. I did enjoy it. And I thought Mark Strong was an excellent film in that. But, that's his character sets the way for Moriarty in this one. And, I hope they make another one. I really do. I had a good time with it.
I don't see Girl with the Dragon Tattoo until tomorrow night. But
well, that's
opening on Tuesday
at
nighttime.
That's opening Tuesday, yeah. So,
Tuesday at 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the season's so crowded that they got these just really weird releases going on. We'll open Tuesday at 7.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, well, and also Mission Impossible in non-IMAX is going to do the same thing. So,
yeah.
Now, here's the thing, reading all this stuff about Fincher and everything the last couple of weeks, very lucky, we talked about this the last time, but never has worked outside the studio system, but he's never really had a blockbuster.
Who was that?
Fincher. You know, Benjamin Button and Social Network did well compared to previous films, but he's never had a blockbuster, and this is his first chance. His second chance. If you get really Alien is his first chance at a blockbuster, but this is going to test him. I mean, it's going to be, and let's not forget, we also have Tintin comes out that day, or is that just an IMAX?
No, I think it's all across.
Oh, shit.
But Tintin we're talking about.
Yeah, no, but...
We're talking about Tintin, and Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is a pretty hard R.
It's a very hard R, but, I mean, you also have Mission Impossible, which will be in all theaters on that.
Yeah.
So they're going to be going head to head, and then you got War Horse on Sunday, the following Sunday. So whoever planned this, wow, guys, thanks.
Yeah, I mean there aren't enough screens. I mean your local theater won't be able to dedicate 5 screens to one movie. I mean
and
that's
Cameron
how bad
Crow
it gets.
Will get, and Cameron Crowe has actually made a good film, and I think he's gonna get lost in the.
I do love that film.
It's a really good film, but I think that's gonna get lost.
It will be. And Young Adult will probably get lost, too.
Yeah, that's the one I haven't seen. I'm going to probably try to see that later this week, but Girl with the Dragon Tattoo comes first, I mean, right now.
So you did check out We Bought a Zoo.
Yeah. We didn't talk about it. Yeah, I saw the sneak preview last week.
Okay.
I thought it was wonderful. I thought it was a very moving film. I think the one criticism I imagine being... put in the film is there's no, they don't, he doesn't, even though it's based on a true story and they stick to that, There's no romance between Matt Damon and Scarlett Johansson, really. That never takes off. But I don't think that's really, since that's not what, that never happened, I don't have a problem with that. I think it's really about Matt Damon's relationship with his children. Especially
yeah.
his son. I think what they, in those scenes where he interacts with his children are very moving. And I think the whole thing is with his brother too, Thomas Hayden Church, who I think puts in a great performance. I think it's a very good film.
It's a very positive.
Yes,
good,
we need
good,
that.
Yeah, good-natured movie, but not so that it feels saccharine or makes you want to throw up. You know, it's. I mean, it's authentic. It's true. It feels.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got that sharp Cameron Crowe writing. It's got a couple
of
great
selections too that are always
yeah.
in every
yeah.
film that he does that are always sharp. I mean. You can tell there's some scenes where some of the music. Yeah, he definitely wanted to use a song, you know. But it's cool. I enjoyed it. I liked it. I had no problem with it.
Good. Good movies all around.
Yeah. But there's even a now. Have you seen A Dangerous Method yet?
I haven't. No.
Okay. I'd be curious. We saw that. I'd be curious to hear what you think of that. Watching that right after Shame, watching Michael Fassbender and both of these films back to back, kind of is, oh my God. And the other movie, and we'll talk about it when you see it, but I think it's just incredible, is Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Oh, I want to see that, yeah.
It's incredible. I guess we should probably bring this to the Golden Globes. That Gary Oldman didn't get a Golden Globe does surprise me, because I would think you would want to nominate him, and I think he will get an Oscar nomination. I'll be shocked if he doesn't. It's the wow. His performance, everyone's performance in the movie is incredible.
It's not that you forget how great he is, but you don't see him much and anymore. And when you do see him, it's usually like The Dark Knight or something, where he plays normal, and that's got to be a challenge in itself to play average, normal, good guy, no baggage, you know, no
right.
like, monsters in the closet kind of character. And he does it so well. But
he does a
great job
in the Harry Potter films, that third one. He's
right,
phenomenal.
Right.
I mean, you're just like, wow, he can do this too.
He's been one of our greatest actors since he first
yeah.
burst onto the scene. And you know, he's... by hearing interviews with him recently, because he's been making the rounds with this, I tried to get him, but nothing.
Right, right.
He says people don't ask him about JFK as much as he thinks they should. So he's really proud of that performance.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of other actors, like the role that kind of led them to idolize Gary Oldman is True Romance.
Well, that I can see that. I mean, I definitely see that. But, I mean, this is a guy who's played, as you said, Lee Harvey Oswald, Dracula. It was a Beethoven. Sid Vicious. And now George Smiley. It's quite a roster of characters that he's played. And he's just phenomenal in this. His expressions and everything. It's just an incredible performance. But everyone's performance in this film is downright superb. Mark Strong, Tom Hardy, Colin Firth. I mean, everybody.
Yeah, a great
superb.
Cast, isn't it?
It is an incredible cast. Really just incredible.
Well, and I hear it's a minimalist performance, too. When you think of Gary Oldman, I mean, we just mentioned all those characters that kind of defined the early part of his career, and they're very colorful. But recently, with this Tinker Tailor and the Dark Knight series, I mean, he's really gone the minimalist route, you know, a lot more subdued and interior.
Yeah, that's very true.
So it's interesting. SAG Award nominations were announced, too.
Okay. What do you want to talk about first?
I have the Golden Globes up, and we.
Why don't we
do
that? I have that up too. So why don't we do that?
Also, critic top 10 lists are out. I know that Owen chose. Separation was on his list. Girl with the Dragon Tattoo on his list. Ghost Protocol was on his list. Roger Ebert, A Separation, Shame. Those were his top two. The Descendants. Those kinds of movies are
right.
popping up.
Mm-hmm.
Bridesmaids was on Owen's list.
These are all good movies. I mean, I have no problem with most of these. I haven't seen A Separation yet, but that seems to be the favorite going into the foreign film. That seems to be the one to beat.
That's on demand.
Is it on? Okay, I'll have to check. I didn't know it was. Okay, I was looking on demand earlier. I didn't see anything, but.
Yeah, I noticed that. That's on demand.
Okay, you can check it out then.
I just caught The Help last week too, and I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we talked about that.
Yeah,
last
we did,
year.
But no, it's a good movie. So should we go ahead and do this? The Golden Globes first, or?
Sure. Let's talk. Well, first of all, we'll just pay lip service to TV, since we're movie snobs. But best performance by an actress in a. Let's see. I'm trying to look here.
Okay, let me. I've got it up. I got
people like Jessica Lange. American Horror Story got some love. As did.
I really need to watch that. I really need to watch that show.
I haven't seen it either. Boardwalk Empire. And Mildred Pierce got some love, which Mildred Pierce will be in. That'll be one of the titles in my top 10 of the year, actually.
Okay. All right.
Too Big to Fail, Paul Giamatti got some love, which is essentially the only kind of standout performance in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you're looking at him and thinking, wow, he really does look quite a bit like him.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point to bring up about some of these things.
Guy Pearce for Mulder Pearce, and I think that's a good
mm-hmm.
that's a good risky performance from that.
Mm-hmm.
Kate Winslet, Emily Watson, Elizabeth McGovern, Diane Lane, best performance by an actress. Actors like William Hurt, Bill Nighy
mm-hmm.
got nominated. Did you? Boardwalk Empire, you caught up with that, right? That ended well, didn't it?
It ended well. It ended very well. Can we talk about it? Can we actually talk about it? Because it's been a week
sure.
now. Okay, remember last season? God, I hate when they do this, but the last season, like, Michael Pitt, this is going to make him a big star? I love Michael Pitt. I loved him in The Dreamers. That's one of my favorite, I would say one of my favorite performances by him. But... this is okay. They say this about everyone. Oh, this is gonna make you a big star, and then boom, you're killed off.
Yeah. By the way, if you haven't seen it, turn your volume down.
Great.
No. Let's talk about it.
Okay.
What an incredibly ballsy move.
Very ballsy.
To kill off your second lead
mm-hmm.
at the end of your second season.
Yeah, I mean.
And they're scared. I read a review with the. Show creators, and they said, it is a very scary prospect.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, we don't necessarily know what we're going to do now. We just knew that we wanted to throw in...
Oh, they said that?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
They said, we just knew we wanted to do something that made dramatic sense to shake this whole enterprise up.
Well, they certainly did that.
Yeah, they did that.
But yeah, it gets better. I think this season there was a brutality on the show, especially the last couple of episodes. Not just the Michael Pitt thing, but just, I mean, it's just they really upped the ante this season.
They really did.
I mean, really.
Dean, did we ruin Boardwalk Empire for you?
No, I lost interest in that show a long time ago.
Okay, good.
okay. That's fair.
So
fair
I take it you're on the phone for Golden Globes?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. You love the Golden Globes, don't you?
Oh, yes. Don't we all?
I'm talking about the awards ceremony.
No, but
I think we should bring up something.
I think we should bring up something, though, because we are going to talk about, obviously, the snubs and everything. But this is done by the Hollywood Foreign Press. It's not critics. It's not Academy voters. It's this weird organization like Scientologist or whatever that don't really – I don't understand – I don't understand how it's become. This has become like the precursor to the Academy Awards because it's really quite a different organization, a different beast.
Well, and their philosophy seems to be
right.
We want to pack the theater with as many massive stars as we possibly can.
Right.
Right.
So that's why something like The Ides of March is not nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not
Tree of Life, you know?
Yeah. But Tree of Life has star. You have one of the biggest.
Yeah, but they
stars.
Already took care of Brad Pitt with Moneyball. Well, they
hey,
already.
You
took
could
care
have given him a dual nomination then. I mean,
yeah. They did that with George Clooney too. So
yeah.
But anyway, okay. So let's go through these films.
Okay.
I got it right here. Let's start with foreign language film. Yet another kind of they managed to put in a star vehicle in here too in a way. The Flowers of War in the Land of Blood and Honey, in case Angelina wasn't going to show up with her husband that night.
Yeah. but this is weird because, like, now the Flowers of War, I think these are all star. Three of these are star-studded in some sense because you've got Christian Bale on the Flowers of War.
Right.
This is a and very
but in the Land of... Okay. The other nominations, The Kid with a Bike, A Separation... And The Skin I Live In. All right. So best foreign language film, you have China, Belgium, Iran, Spain, and the USA.
Wait, which one is the USA now? Is that the
And the Land of Blood and Honey from the USA.
Oh, is that considered... Okay, even though it's...
Well, I mean, it doesn't really... It's really foreign language film, so it doesn't necessarily... Right. If it's all in, you know, whatever, you know, Bosnian or whatever, it stands to reason that it would be nominated for it.
So could Apocalypto have been a foreign language film?
I would have supported that endeavor wholeheartedly.
Sure.
But
with Bane and The Dark Knight Rises, could that be considered foreign language?
Yes,
you can understand
yes,
what
definitely.
He says?
But I want to say something because I don't think I've talked about The Skin I Live In. I turned to my mom halfway through that movie, and I said, this is the most fucked up thing I've seen in a long time. It's a messed up movie. I mean, it's... I mean, if you sort of know where it's going, you know how it's going to end, and that even you're just like, oh my God.
Mm.
Oh my God is all you can say.
That's Pedro,
but I mean, he really outdid himself in the sense of just outlandishness with this one. What do you think? Now, let me ask you this. Do you think they're going to go the popular route with A Separation, or do you think they're going to go with something like In the Land of Blood and Honey?
You know what?
I think they will go for In the Land of Blood and Honey.
Because it's the Globes, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's actually supposed to be good. People have seen it, and they say it's actually very well done. And the one thing about Angelina Jolie is when she gets behind, ever since she's really gotten into the, you know, world affairs and everything, like A Mighty Heart or something, like a lot of people thought she got snubbed there. But this, they might make up for that with this one. And she really, this is a real passion project of hers. She's wanted to do this for a long time. So they might really, you know, give this to her.
I'm sorry, I'm eating a candy bar.
That's your interest in Angelina Jolie's directorial career. I'm eating a candy bar.
Every time I think of Angelina Jolie, it makes me want to put a Twix in my mouth. Yeah, I would think that the Golden Globes would be open to giving it to that film.
Mm.
I don't think it's going to be nominated at the Oscars for Best Foreign.
No, I don't see how. I honestly don't see how. I think right now Separation is the film that's the front runner. I just see it all over the place. So,
well, Dean, do you concur? Oh no, you said you think In the Land of Blood.
I think they'll give it to Angelina Jolie. I just think that's just a typical Golden Globe move. So.
Yeah. Best animated film, we got The Adventures of Tintin, Arthur Christmas, Cars 2, Puss in Boots, and Rango. I think the only thing that'll give Rango a run for its money will be The Adventures of Tintin.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think the edge goes to Rango.
I agree. I think Rango, it would actually be a smart choice because it's a really neat film, but it depends on what kind of reception Tintin gets. Now, you've seen Tintin, and you're kind of lukewarm, if I'm not mistaken, about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's fun.
Let me ask you this. Would it be better as a live-action film?
No.
Okay. I just figured that out.
No, that wasn't... No.
Have they made improvements on the motion capture thing? I mean, do the eyes look better in the
people? Oh yeah, it looks great. Like it, and it's actually the nature of the material, the kind of comic strip kind of look to it, realistic looking comic strip. It fits the material. I mean, it works thematically for it. And you will not see a more kind of visually inventive movie this year in terms of the staging of a scene or a sequence or the blocking or the, you know, how everything is so perfectly timed and coordinated, all the actions within a frame. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful, Spielbergian stuff. Tintin is a dud. I mean, as a character, there's nothing to him. I mean, there's no interest at all.
Right.
Now, the supporting characters, there are. I mean, they hold a little bit more interest. But when your lead character is a bore, I mean, you got a problem.
Okay.
But,
wow.
You know, it's a fun movie. It's, you know, and I'm sure that kids will love it. But Rango seems to be the odds-on favorite.
Okay. Wow. Okay. No, that's good to know, though. That's,
Rango has pretty much had this award sewn up, like, here in the Oscars as
well.
Yeah,
because the Pixar movie is just so uninvolved. It's just a sequel. It's a sequel, can we be honest, to one of the weaker Pixar entries. I mean,
it's weird that they chose to do Cars. Did they just do Cars 2 because of the marketing success, the merchandising success of Cars, the first Cars? Because
I guess
the
first one was one of the rare exception in Pixar that was boring. You know, it was not.
Yeah.
It wasn't very exciting. You know, it just wasn't very interesting. So.
Or clever.
I think it still did well.
Oh, it did very well. Oh, there's no denying that.
And then on video, I mean DVD. They'll buy anything Pixar. Yeah. Just sit their kids.
I love
in
that.
Front
they'll
of
buy
it.
Anything.
Well, yeah. Just sit your kid in front of it, you know. Just, you know, pick up that movie so I can have 2 hours away from my kid.
Yeah.
Okay. Best original score. We have The Artist, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Hugo, Warhorse, and W.E., which is the Madonna movie. It figures that the Madonna movie gets a music nomination. Because this is an off-the-wall choice, W.E.
That is. I don't know how that got in there. I've heard War Horse, and I've not seen it, but I've heard the score. I have the score, and it's a beautiful score.
Oh, yeah.
I like the score for Hugo. From what I've heard with The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, it is very good. I think The Artist might have the, and Dean will probably be the best person to say this, but because it is a silent movie, a musical is a key part of the sound, I would think The Artist might have this locked up.
Yeah, it pretty much does. Pretty much does. It's one of those scores that's like a memorable. It's like the score like has you humming it as you're leaving, you know, sort of. So it's like it's definitely a standout score.
Mm-hmm. I own all these scores except W.E.
You own The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I mean not as a physical, I mean as a digital.
Oh, okay.
I have all the tracks, but
right, okay.
Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is not Social Network has more of a melody than Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Just that dun 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 dun.
Yeah.
You know. That's more melody than you'll hear in the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which isn't a criticism, but Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is clearly intended to be an atmospheric score.
Right, okay.
The Artist, you're absolutely right about your reasoning behind that, and it is a beautiful score. But I still think it's The Artist's biggest competition is Hugo. If for no other reason in this category, because have you ever heard a Howard Shore sound like this? I mean, Howard Shore scores typically sound alike, and they're nothing like Hugo.
True.
That's true.
But War Horse is a good, lush John Williams score.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think the artist will be the front runner here. But don't discount Hugo. All right, panning up, we're on to Best Original Song, which is year after year one of the worst categories in any award show.
I love Chris Cornell. I don't remember. I mean, Machine Gun Preacher is forgettable, and I love Chris Cornell. I did not know he had a song. Have no idea that he had a song for that movie, that anyone had a song for that movie.
They're typically just awful, aren't they? I mean, Best Original Songs are...
I think both the Globes and the Oscars should discontinue this category because we're not living in the age of, Cole Porter and everything like that. It's just not. Songs and movies are superfluous now, and I don't think they deserve their own category. And I especially don't think they deserve. One thing I like about the Globes is they don't perform the songs. So, but when you get to the Oscars, you know, they have to do this 10-minute number that, you know, performing these songs that nobody cares about. If they want to shorten the ceremony, they should just cut out the Best Original Song.
Didn't know Machine Gun Preacher had, you know, this was even an option.
Didn't either. They were probably given a list. These were all the songs from the movies.
Yeah.
They probably turned.
They saw Chris Cornell's name, which is.
Yeah,
awesome,
they shuck it around in a hat and they let somebody pick something. You know, occasionally there's a great movie song.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and that strikes a dilemma. So you either have the category or you don't, because you just can't bring back the category when there's a good movie song.
I just get rid of it, though, because we're just not living in the age of, of songs written for movies that are anything but, things that go over the closing credits or something.
Yeah.
Like
The Help. Like the song that's nominated.
Like The Help and like Albert Nobbs and probably Machine Gun Preacher as well. So.
I don't remember. That would have stood out. I just don't remember. I just don't remember.
WWE, Madonna's gotten a nomination there for Best Original Song. Albert Nobbs, Romeo and Juliet, The Help, and Machine Gun Preacher.
I'm pulling for Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, I would choose Romeo and Juliet, too.
Because of Elton John. I mean, that's what I would just... Yeah,
and the history of animation and the importance of songs in there.
Yeah.
Now, that's the one area where music is usually... A song is usually an important role in an animated film.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going for the song from The Help, The Living Proof.
I think that's a safe bet, actually.
Yeah.
I think that movie needs help against Romeo and Juliet in this category.
I just don't see them rewarding Romeo and Juliet an award.
I didn't see them rewarding Norbit either.
I think this is a lot better than Norbit. I think. I'm not sure about that.
The Academy Award nominated Norbit.
It was nominated.
Was it nominated or did it win? Did Norbit actually win?
I would have thrown up if it did. I would have remembered throwing up.
It was nominated. I mean, that's worse enough, isn't it?
Well, Poseidon was nominated, too, for special effects or something, so.
What did you just say?
Poseidon. Remember that
movie? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. I thought you said a dirty word.
No, I was not on this show. Come on. Not me.
Okay. Best screenplay, motion picture. The Artists, The Descendants, The Ides of March, Midnight in Paris, Moneyball.
This has always been a problematic category because it should be adapted and original.
The problem here, I mean, it's not a problem necessarily, but this is something that all of these are contenders for the Oscar except Ides of March and any category that the Ides of March is nominated in, really.
I tried to watch the Ides of March this week, and it was so boring.
I think the trailer does a great job of selling the movie, and then once you get to the first half is really intriguing, but once you realize what it is, you're like, really? Really? That's what we're... Okay, whatever. You know, next.
Well, the DP for the Ides of March and the Descendants, I believe, is going to be part of our cinematography series.
Oh, shit. Now you tell us. That's good. Thank you.
And he also shot W and that kind of thing. Let me just pause here. Best Screenplay Motion Picture. Remind us that that's where we're at.
Yeah.
In mid-January, we're going to do a series celebrating cinematography, and it's going to be week-long series of interviews with different DPs, and it's shaping up to be pretty good.
Awesome. No, this is good. This is good. I'm glad that you brought this up, you know. So
we've got we've so far confirmed we've got Paul Cameron, who shot movies like Collateral and Man on Fire. You know, he's done Tony Scott. He's done very distinctive looking films.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Buddy Bukowski, who shoots the Orin Moverman films like The Messenger and Rampart.
Yeah, I saw that.
We're in conversation with Robert Richardson. Let me tell you, like when I saw an email from Robert Richardson, and I was like, oh my god! It was like with this heart in my stomach kind of moments, and I started shaking and getting excited. Because honestly, he's made like more of my favorite movies than any other DP. He was Oliver Stone's
mm-hmm.
regular DP. Now he's worked with Scorsese like four times, including Hugo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the top. I mean, in terms of working cinematographers today,
right?
And then the Faden Papa Michael is the man's name who DP'd Descendants and Ides of March. He also did W and few other things. Salvatore Totino, he's Ron Howard's cinematographer. His first movie, being a DP by himself, was Any Given Sunday, which had to have been a job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what a big project to be your first time out, you know. Anyway, so look for that in mid-January, and we'll make further announcements on who we get. And the DP of Drive, we're in conversation with him too.
Oh, cool.
Okay, so screenplay, Artist, Descendants, Ides of March, Midnight in Paris, and Moneyball. This could be a tough one. It's worthy nominees here.
Yeah, all of them I think are worthy. I'm going to go with Woody Allen.
I'm going with Moneyball.
I am also going with Moneyball.
Okay.
But I think the Descendants could also... If the Descendants wins anything,
yeah,
it could win this.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but as Javier Bardem says, Jerry is going for Woody Allen.
Yeah, Woody Allen. That's right, Woody Allen. That's right.
You've heard him pronounce his name. He really does pronounce it Woody Allen.
Really? Oh wow.
Yes.
But I think in the original, I think you guys are right. You know, when it comes to the Oscars, I definitely see Moneyball picking up the adapted screenplay. I do see that. I'd be surprised if it doesn't. I think that's going to be where it wins. I do think, though, Woody Allen has an excellent chance of an original screenplay win this year. I do.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, and that would be the original category.
Yeah.
Moneyball would be the adapted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Descendants would be adapted too, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but I don't know if that's where. Well, now that's a good point now because Alexander Payne, they might give him screenplay this year.
I don't think so. I think they're going to look at Moneyball and they're going to look at the source material, which from what I've read, the source mm-hmm. material is quite dense with facts and figures and so forth, and kind of difficult to. It was kind of difficult to rest the movie out of
right.
that.
Okay, that's
book.
A good point too. That's a valid point.
Did you see Moneyball yet, Dean?
I did. I loved it. I loved it too.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was absolutely superb.
Isn't Brad Pitt amazing in that movie?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't that
movie
star?
He is great in it. He's great in it, and Jonah Hill was justifiably, you know. As well, and
I thought all the performances in that were wonderful.
And even Philip Seymour Hoffman,
even
who's in it very little and does very little. I mean, he doesn't have to do anything. I mean, you just see this completely run-down, wearied baseball coach
throughout those scenes. It's just
Was that Arliss Howard in one of the final scenes?
The final scene
with the Boston Red Sox guy.
Yeah.
I thought he was terrific in it. He has only one scene in it, but I love movies that have room to have, you know, one actor come in for one scene and mm-hmm. just blow things away. I did think that almost everybody in that movie was great, like down to just the tiniest performances in it. It was just a superb movie.
Good. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you liked it. Best director, Woody Allen, George Clooney, who gets a lot of Woody Allen, I'm sure. Michael Hazanavicius, Alexander Payne, Martin Scorsese, or as Sofia Vergara said the other day, Martin Scorsese.
I think it's between Scorsese and the artist director.
Come on, Jerry, say it. Hazanavicius
or whatever.
Hazanavicius.
Can I ask you guys a question? Has he made anything else?
Well, he did a James Bond spoof that did well at Cannes a couple of years ago called OFS.
Oh yeah, okay.
117.
Okay,
so.
All right. Yeah, I know. Okay.
So yeah, so that's his only previous.
He might. I mean, movie has the most nominations, so I mean, he's definitely got a shot.
The Golden Globes. What will the Golden Globes go with?
I think they will go with Hazanavicius.
That's a very strong possibility.
I think you know, even though the other four people are stars, two of them literally, Woody Allen and George Clooney, I think that the artist is more of a director driven film. You know.
I you know what? I think it's going to be tight. What am I going with, Scorsese or Hazanavicius? Well, they're the Hollywood Foreign Press, so they would be more likely to be able to pronounce his last name.
That's another thing, too. That's another thing.
That's true. Okay.
But, I mean, Scorsese is a beloved international director.
Mm-hmm.
As is Woody Allen.
I don't think there's that much love out there for Hugo. I really don't.
Maybe not in your heart, Dean.
Maybe not in your heart, but I mean, I think in the critics' hearts, but that doesn't matter. But no, and unfortunately, it hasn't caught on with the general public, unfortunately, but it might. You never know. You never know.
I'll go with Hazanavicius, too.
Yeah, I think that's what it's looking like. But who knows? Clooney might get it.
Yeah, being the Golden Globes, he would very well know. Best performance by an actress in a supporting role. Berenice Bejo for The Artist. Jessica Chastain for The Help. I'm glad she got nominated for that because, like I said last week, I didn't recognize her. I didn't realize that was her.
I know, me too. I was very impressed with her in that movie.
And she was damn sexy too. I mean,
yeah.
Outside of the performance, I mean, she was. I said, wow, that's a bombshell.
Yeah.
Janet McTeer and Albert Nobbs. I mean, I was polishing my Albert Nobb just watching Jessica Chastain in The Help.
Okay, all right.
Octavia Spencer for The Help, and Shailene Woodley for The Descendants. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going with Octavia Spencer for The Help.
Me too. I think that she's the. I think that's the favorite. I think in this category.
Yeah.
Even more than Jessica Chastain, who's done like 15 movies this year.
I really do. I just when you talk about The Help, that's the it's her performance that gets the most recognition. So
yeah,
I'm going with that. I mean, I may be wrong. They might cancel each other out.
I don't think so. I think Chastain's performance is very good in the movie, but it's in screen time, it's quite a bit smaller than Octavia Spencer's contribution.
For me personally, I liked her in the movie, but I mean the standout to me was there were two standouts in the movie for me, and that was Viola Davis and Cicely Tyson in her small role.
Right.
I was as affected by Cicely Tyson's performance in that movie as any I've seen this year. Just her kind of wordless, almost wordless performance. But, I mean, it just felt so lived in, and that was just devastating when she's kicked out of the house. I was just sobbing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think The Help is in some ways kind of a maligned movie because when it came out, people were like, "Yeah, I don't know." You know, some people were like, "Yeah, it's going to be another cheesy."
But it did very
Southern
well.
Movie. And it did, and it's not a cheesy Southern movie. It's actually
not at all.
It does things pretty correctly, I think. So
yeah, I do too.
But Octavia Spencer's performance comes more from a place of also of like sort of a weird combination of humor and anger.
Right.
And that's kind of where her performance comes from. Her role doesn't like hit those notes that make you want to cry, but they hit other notes.
Well, Jessica Chastain hit a definite note with me in that movie. Let me just tell you. Have I mentioned that?
No, you haven't, Jamie. Go on.
Let me
she
tell you what
really
note she hit for me.
She was really funny in it, too. And, you know, she'll have other chances to get up there.
She was in so many movies this year.
Yeah.
I was just one look at her, and I looked down, and I had a tree of life. Let me tell you.
How many phallic references can we get into the show, folks?
Yeah, I would put it to her like she was paying off the debt. Okay, let's move on. I'm kidding. I was just trying to put it like...
No, it's good.
What was your choice? I'll
go with you guys. I'll go with Octavia.
I don't know.
Who cares about the Golden Globes? I'm flexible.
It's a fan club. I mean, you know...
All right.
Best performance by an actor in a supporting role. Kenneth Branagh, playing Laurence Olivier in My Week with Marilyn. Albert Brooks, Jonah Hill, Viggo Mortensen, Christopher Plummer.
This is a good category because each of these performances is excellent.
It really is, yeah.
I mean, Viggo is superb in A Dangerous Method. If he wasn't in it, he adds some much needed, I hate to say this, but he's actually almost the comic relief in some ways in A Dangerous Method.
And it is a very different outside the box choice. Too,
yeah.
For him
I
to
would
play
actually personally pick Viggo Mortensen for best supporting actor out of these five.
He makes the movie, I think. He adds the contrast to the Fassbender character so well. And it's just what we learned. I mean, that scene when Fassbender comes over, you know, and he's eating and he takes all the food off the plate and everything, and he has his whole family there, and it's like, dude, save some other, you know?
Yeah.
But I would give it, if I had to pick, I'd give it to Albert Brooks because he's playing against type more so than even Jonah Hill. Albert Brooks' performance is just, wow.
Momentum. Yeah. I mean,
these are all great performances.
Yeah. Usually there are definites out there in terms of, this is as close to a sure thing as you can get. And a lot of times it's in supporting categories. All the momentum goes towards Albert Brooks. I mean, regardless of what SAG did to overlook him. But, I mean, don't you agree, Dean? I mean, Albert Brooks has the momentum.
I think it's really between Brooks and Plummer, you know.
Yeah, I think Plummer is the other one that you got to look at too, because that's been the talk for months now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's really between those two people. The one nomination in this category that continues to amaze me is Kenneth Branagh. Who was also nominated for SAG. Because I don't think that's a really meaty role, really. I mean, you know, in terms of the movie, he doesn't really have a really great scene in it, if you ask me.
No,
so,
but I think it's more because he worships Ovid. He, in real life, he worships Olivier. Justice does he do to his idol, I guess, is the thing.
I know, but I don't think that he even, you know, I don't think that he, you know, conjures up the spirit of Laurence Olivier very effectively.
It's a good movie. I don't think it's a great movie. It's a good movie. It's an entertaining movie, but
well, she's great in it. But you know, she's great in it, Michelle Williams.
And I also thought the male lead was very good, too. I forget his name, but I thought he was very good.
Yeah, Eddie Redmayne,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's going to be difficult, you know, to choose between Brooks and Plummer in this. But I think I'm eventually going to have to go with Christopher Plummer just because
okay.
of the...
That's a good choice.
Age,
I mean,
the age thing, the, you know, the sentimental kind of thing. But people love Albert Brooks, too, so it could go either way. But it's definitely between those two. But I'm heading towards Plummer.
Okay. So two Brooks, one Plummer.
Okay.
Best performance by an actress in a motion picture, musical or comedy, Jodie Foster for Carnage.
This is a weird category.
Charlize Theron for Young Adult. Kristen Wiig for Bridesmaids. Michelle Williams for My Week with Marilyn. Kate Winslet in Carnage. Now, if this year's nominations for the Golden Globes had any point of controversy, it was kind of unavoidable because there's no best supporting category for comedies,
mm-hmm.
so Melissa McCarthy could not get nominated.
Yeah, I would definitely have nominated her. I'm going to go with Kristen Wiig.
I personally would choose Kristen Wiig because we are talking about comedy or musical, and I thought Kristen Wiig was hilarious in Bridesmaids.
Mm-hmm.
And I also thought she was hilarious in Paul, which
yes,
was
she was. And
she
thank
was
you
in.
For bringing that up because that's a movie that's been completely forgotten. That's a very enjoyable film.
Yeah. So she gave, for me, she gave two of the funniest performances of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they're going to give it to Michelle Williams. Even
yeah.
though, personally, I don't really think of My Week with Marilyn as a comedy.
No, I don't either.
I think they just nominated it because it has a musical number in it. Right,
right? But let's talk about the other thing. Is Carnage that – and it is a black comedy, and if I see the trailer one more time, I'm going to puke. But, I mean –
just like Kate Winslet in the movie.
Yeah, I mean,
she has a big vomit scene in the movie.
Is that
yeah,
really? Are we really going to put? There was nothing else. I mean, Carnage. Is that what they're really? Is it? I know it's a black comedy and all that, but that was okay. I mean, I guess. I mean,
that's another divisive movie.
That they were just filling out that category. I just they didn't have anything else.
What about Emma Stone?
That would have been nice. That would have been nice.
In either Crazy Stupid Love or The Help, I guess. I mean, is The Help now? Is The Help count
as
comedy?
The Help is drama.
That's more drama. Okay, no, I was just because but Emma Stone, Crazy Stupid Love, I would have thought maybe. Just a thought. I mean,
yeah,
It's sort of a supporting role for her in that.
Okay,
day,
all right.
So
I mean, but
weird.
I would have gone. I would have gone with her for that. I mean, it just seems like Carnage seems like an odd choice in this category.
Well, if you think international, Hollywood, foreign, Polanski, and they're supportive of Polanski.
Yeah, that's true.
This is an actor's piece, whether you like the movie or not.
Right,
you know,
of course.
It exists for four actors playing off of one another, and that's it. Now, this is a divisive movie, though. I mean, reading reviews of this movie, I mean, people really dig it,
mm-hmm.
or they're like, oh, God, this is awful. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Owen put it in one of his worst movies of the year, and then I read, a New York Times or LA Times review of it that said that this is one of the best comedy of manners to come out in a long time.
Okay.
Have you guys seen it yet?
No, it doesn't open here until January, so.
I've already seen it, and it's not very effective. It might have worked on stage, but there's something about it on film where,
mm-hmm.
Constantly, the movie begins with them coming into the apartment and they get into, it's easy to tell that they're not getting along right
mm-hmm.
from the beginning.
Right.
And they're led to the door, the other couple is led to the door, that's Winslet and Vault. Are led to the door numerous times to leave and almost leave, and then they're led back in, and it seems very contrived. And then when the dialogue switches from the issue at hand, which is the two kids,
mm-hmm.
there's two kids fighting at school, and
mm-hmm.
and branches out to other subjects that are sort of may be boiling underneath the surface. It seems the whole movie just seems really forced. It's really difficult to believe that this group of four people would spend more than 10 minutes in each other's company.
Doesn't it, just from your description, though, doesn't it sound like, because they're trying to leave, they're being escorted out, doesn't it sort of sound like the discreet charm of the bourgeoisie when they're always trying to have dinner and they can't?
maybe it's kind of an homage to that in some ways, but it doesn't really work. I think
you're not the first person to say that, and I got to say from the trailer, you know, is not basically beneath the surface. Everyone's a shit, essentially, is what it's saying. I mean,
yeah, kind of. And you know, Christoph Waltz is amazing in it, though. I think he's incredibly funny in it. So
I'll go with Michelle Williams in this category for that musical, My Week with Marilyn.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You still staying with Kristen Wiig, though?
Yeah,
Gary?
I'm going to stay with Kristen Wiig just because I think in staying true to the category, comedy or musical. Now, I have not seen Carnage and I haven't seen Young Adult, but I don't know if Young Adult, there's not, let me ask you, Jim, is it a comedic performance from Charlize Theron?
Yeah, as much as.
Okay.
Yeah, as much as Ellen Page and Juno.
Okay, all right. I mean, I'm looking forward to it.
And honestly, Charlize and Michelle, those are the two most likely Oscar contenders out of these
nominees. I think you're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more with that.
Best performance by an actor in a motion picture, musical or comedy, Jean Dujardin.
Jean Dujardin. Yeah.
For The Artist. Brendan Gleeson for The Guard.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great nomination.
And it's a great performance. I was really surprised to see him up, but it's a superb performance from him.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt in 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Gosling for Crazy Stupid Love. And Owen Wilson for Midnight in Paris.
This is a great category.
Yeah, nice.
Lots of unusual choices.
But a lot of also great choices. I mean, I think Ryan Gosling for this one, definitely. Over The Ides of March, I think. Owen Wilson is very good in Midnight in Paris. But to see Joseph Gordon-Levitt finally get some, and he did get it for 500 Days of Summer and a Golden Globe nomination, but to see him get recognition for this role, and to see this movie getting the recognition I think it deserves, is very nice, because it's a wonderful film. But
did you know that Joseph Gordon-Levitt, another actor was playing that part?
Yes, and he, I forget, who was the actor, though, that was...
I don't remember.
I'll look it up and see. But
he dropped out, which left them with just like a day or two to find a replacement. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt was available, so he came in like the next day and started this part.
Huh.
Yeah. I'll go for Jean Dujardin.
I think that's all around. I think that he's the favorite.
For sure. And deservedly so. He's incredibly charming and hilarious in the movie. He's really, really funny in it. So,
best performance by an actress in a motion picture drama or...
Oh, McAvoy. James McAvoy was the original actor.
You're right. Glenn Close for Albert Nobbs. Viola Davis for The Help. Rooney Mara for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Meryl Streep for The Iron Lady. And Tilda Swinton for We Need to Talk About Kevin. Good nomination.
Yeah, nice to see
now,
that.
Now, yeah, I mean, this is, wow.
I think this is what the Oscar nominations will look like.
Me too.
You're,
except for Rooney Mara.
Rooney Mara? Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
You sure about that? It might. I think Rooney Mara might.
Mean, you think they're going to leave out Michelle Williams for, in no way?
You don't know. I mean, I've only unfortunately seen one of these. Now you got it as you know. While Streep is certainly the favorite in Glenn Close, do not rule out Tilda Swinton. She has been, you know, for a Best Actress nomination. This is the long time coming, and her performance in this is just supposedly totally amazing.
But then you have Meryl Streep, who has been nominated an ungodly number of times, and everyone's saying, you know, she's due.
Right.
To win.
Well, she's won a lot more Golden Globes than she has Oscars. So
right.
That doesn't really count here in the Golden Globes, because she's won She's won like 5 or 6 Golden Globes.
Okay.
So
let me throw something out to you. The Golden Globes loves to not give it to the newest thing. I think it's a safe bet that Zoe will get it for the best actress in a comedy for New Girl. I think New Girl will, in those categories, will win. Do you think Rooney Mara, because she's relatively unknown, they might give it to her? Just to throw it out there, because they love to do this. More in TV than film, but I'm just going to throw that out there.
I don't see it happening. I really don't. I think they're probably going to give it to Meryl Streep.
I think Meryl Streep's the favorite, but I'm just saying they like to do this, the Golden Globes, with the newer, fresher.
You're absolutely right about the TV versus
yeah.
movie thing. They do that in TV a lot more than they do in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to go a completely surprising route and give it to somebody that's not even nominated.
Reese Witherspoon for Water for Elephants?
No. I was thinking Robert Pattinson for that movie. Actually.
Oh, okay. He was good in that. He is actually very good. I have to give him credit for that.
Good performance by an actress.
He was very good. He wore a dress the whole time.
To me, the most embarrassing nomination is still this Glenn Close for Albert Nobbs, because that movie is atrociously bad. And she's completely unconvincing. In every way. Like,
really? Okay. I don't know much about it, Dean. I don't know much about the movie, so.
Yeah.
Does she ever sing? Does she ever break into, like, Papa, Can You Hear Me? In the movie?
Can You Hear Me? Oh, my God.
No, okay. It's bad. It's a bad movie. It's really terrible. I hope she doesn't get nominated, because it's so Oscar baity, sort of. Let's do
she gets
this
nominated,
so
she'll demand to do our show, and she'll want to be interviewed by you, Dean.
Well, I love Glenn Close's supporting work in the 80s and stuff like that, but she's kind of dropped off the map in terms of movies, really, as far as I'm concerned. So, I personally would give it to Tilda Swinton, but Meryl Streep will win it.
Yeah, but what about the award?
Meryl Streep will win the award.
I think so too.
Yeah, I think that's a safe. I think that's good.
Best performance by an actor in a drama: George Clooney for The Descendants, Leonardo DiCaprio for J. Edgar, Michael Fassbender for Shame, Ryan Gosling for The Ides of March, Brad Pitt for Moneyball.
I think it's between Pitt and Clooney.
Yeah,
I really do.
I think it's Pitt's to lose. I don't see how he can lose it. It's so obviously the best performance out of the five, you ask me.
I think so, too. I mean, I haven't seen a couple of these, but I think so, too. I love Brad Pitt in Moneyball. I love him in Tree of Life. I think this has been a great year for him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think George Clooney is going to get it.
I think George Clooney, and I would get I'm torn between, because they're both great performances. Leonardo DiCaprio, there are a lot of times you should have nominated him. This is not the one. I'm sorry.
Boy, that movie is terrible. J. Edgar, that's the worst. What a slog to get through that movie.
It is even worse in Reflection for me.
Mm-hmm. But now let's go to the one. Of all these performances that Michael Fassbender's given, is Shame really the one to go with this year?
Well, Shame is... You know, I mean, it's an addiction drama, so, you know, he's got a disease, and so, I mean.
I would give it to her for Jane Eyre, even over this, but I think it's a better movie, but I guess they got to give it to, nominate him for something, and I guess this is the one. Jane Eyre is so, like, ancient history to voters, so.
This one's the most high-profile, controversial, daring, kind of on-paper kind of movie.
Yeah, that's true, and, yeah. I mean.
I don't think it'll win.
No.
I think Clooney's... I do think Clooney's got it. And Clooney's been around for a while. And that says Brad Pitt. But, God, what a great year for Brad Pitt.
Mm-hmm.
So Brad Pitt would be my choice. But I think the Globes and the Oscars will choose Clooney over
mm-hmm.
Pitt, actually.
You do? Really? I don't see that.
This is just his year, I think. But and I have no – I mean, I think it's a great performance, an awesome performance from Clooney. I really do.
Best motion picture, musical, or comedy? Go ahead, Dean. What?
Oh, I was just going to say, Clooney does give a terrific performance in the movie, and it's a little bit different from what he's done in the past. But I still think it's going to be Brad Pitt.
And I'd have no problem with that, because I think it's
I'd be happy as hell if he won, yeah.
It's an incredible performance from Brad Pitt, as is the Tree of Life, too. So, I mean.
But I equate it more with, like, well, I don't know. I don't know if I do or not. I kind of equate Brad Pitt's performance in Moneyball with something like Tom Cruise and Jerry Maguire. Because it's what I've said before, many times about Moneyball, is that it's a true movie star performance. And I think George Clooney is unsexied up enough in The Descendants that, it, you know, and people love George Clooney. I mean, they have such a kind of a warm feeling towards him.
Mm-hmm.
That I think that that's the best shot is Clooney taking
right.
home.
Okay.
Best motion picture, musical, or comedy? The Artist, Bridesmaids, 50-50, Midnight in Paris, My Week with Maryland, My Week in Maryland.
That's very interesting, Jamie.
The Jerry Dennis Story, My Week in Maryland.
Yep.
I think it's clearly going to Jack and Jill.
Yeah, why isn't that? I mean, this is a sham. Why isn't that up for anything? I mean,
I don't know.
That will get Razzies galore, though.
I think it's going to Tucker and Dale versus Evil myself. But.
I love that movie.
I haven't seen it yet, so don't spoil it for me. I didn't know that.
That's in my top 10 of the year, Tucker and Dale.
Oh, cool.
Actually.
All right, awesome.
Okay. Well, The Artist. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's The Artist. Totally.
Pretty obvious. Yeah.
Okay, panning up. Oh, to the last category. Best motion picture drama. The Descendants, The Help, Hugo, Ides of March, Moneyball, and War Horse. A category so strong they chose 6 nominees. They could have gone with 5 and just counted out Ides of March, but no, this is the problem.
This is, I think they might... Wow.
Which I do think you'll see Oscar nominations for Best Picture for each of these, if especially if it's more than 5.
Yeah.
Except
for the
Ides
of March.
For the Ides of March.
Yeah, they'll all be nominated for Best Picture for sure.
I want to say, even though I haven't seen it, I mean, I've seen all these except for War Horse, but I think, I don't know, War Horse, I hope it's as good as it looks. But I'm
kidding. I mean, some of the reviews I've read have been like positively, like glowing. Like
let me tell you. All right, let me ask each of you. What if they're doing the 6 here? The Ides of March should not be in here. What should be in here, both of you? What movie did you want to see in here?
Tree of Life.
All right,
Tree of Life.
Okay,
sure.
Yeah. I mean, Tree of Life definitely. And Jack and Jill, but no. I would actually argue, I would like to have seen, even though there's no way in hell, Drive. I would love to have seen Drive in there, but there's no way in hell that's going to happen.
Well, my second choice would have been Melancholia.
But I am surprised she didn't get nominated.
Yeah.
I think she deserves a nomination, and I think Oscar will reward her for that.
You know what, and if there are 10 Oscar nominations, if there happen to be, which I don't think there will be this year, but... If there were 10, I think the Drive could be one of the 10.
Yeah, I think Drive could definitely be in there. Oh, definitely.
Well, the only problem with Drive being in the top 10 is that it's not going to be nominated for anything else, really, except for supporting actor. I mean, I don't see it. You know.
Could be, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it could be cinematography. But
I think cinematography.
Maybe
I think
cinematography.
Tree of Life, obviously. Tree of Life has that locked up.
Yeah.
Unless I'm missing something.
And if Cliff Martinez... You know, I was going through, because I've kind of collected my top 10 scores of the year that we'll do some stuff on next month on the show.
Mm.
And there's an overriding theme of the electronic scores are my favorite ones this year. I mean,
I got Hannah, the Chemical Brothers. I love that. And I love the Chemical Brothers, but that's an awesome score. I have that playing in the background right now, and that's a great
There
score.
Are very few great orchestral scores this year.
I put War Horse there, though. I definitely put War Horse as one of the great.
Something about Trent Reznor winning the Oscar last year really opened up the floodgates for electronic scores.
Yeah.
But my favorite score is Contagion. I mean, more than Drive. Drive for me works for the songs,
mm-hmm.
for the different music. You know.
But Contagion gets nothing, though, so far.
And Contagion won't get a best score, but that is my favorite of the
mm-hmm.
I think Hugo's got this.
Hmm.
I'm going to go with Moneyball.
I think it's going to be – I was thinking Moneyball, too, just on given the movie star prowess. I know you could go with The Descendants, too, but I think Moneyball really has this.
It's possible that The Help might get in, too.
Mm-hmm.
I go with Moneyball because I think it's the best out of the bunch. But it's possible that The Help will get in there because it would be a very popular choice. And it's the biggest moneymaker out of all of them.
But I want to add something, and there is something that's not represented here, unless I'm missing something. I do think that there may be 10. I think you have to nominate Harry Potter in the Best Picture just to give it recognition.
That's a possibility.
And I think the whole series is magnificent, and I mean it's a series that got better and better. And I think that needs to be. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to win, but I think it needs to be recognized as one of the truly great movie series.
I don't think that there's any chance. That, you know, the internet is alight with people who are completely shocked that Harry Potter hasn't figured into these year-end awards.
No,
but
it has been put on some best of lists, and I do think that. I do think the movie, obviously in the technical categories, is going to be nominated. It might even get a best original score. I do think, though, if they do this 10 best picture, I think that's going to be the popular choice.
I don't see it.
I think it will be if there's 10.
If there's 10, I would be surprised if it's not on there. And I think it deserves it. It's just a wonderful series. They did a great job. And it just got better and better with each film.
And let's face it. I mean, it's like a, not that it should be a criteria, but it's really boosted box office. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you take out the Harry Potters from each year,
mm-hmm.
and you got a much weaker box office.
Right.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. All right. So the Golden Globe Awards take place on January 15th, Sunday. On January 24th, the Oscar nominations are announced. But even before that, on the 12th, you have the Critics' Choice Awards that are given out. On the 29th, you have the Screen Actors Guild Awards given out. You have the BAFTA Awards given out on the 17th. No, the nominations come out the 17th.
Yeah.
I mean, oh my God. They're all over the Directors Guild. Those are given out on the 28th. Writers Guild, February 19th.
I think the Directors Guild, who gets that, the nominations for that.
That's always a curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that Bennett Miller has a good chance of surprising everyone, by the way, in the Directors Guild, getting in there.
He very well might, especially since he was kind of a last-minute savior for that movie.
Mm-hmm.
After Soderbergh dropped out.
Yeah.
All right, so real quick before we go, let's talk about a couple of the SAG Awards, because they have a few off-ball choices, which they always do.
Al Pacino for Jack and Jill?
Well, he deserved it, but I generally really like the SAG Awards, like the feeling. I mean,
Right, of course.
Actors giving awards to their peers and that kind of thing, but there were some omissions here, like Albert Brooks and...
Well, I'm looking right now.
Yeah, my computer's trying to load.
Okay, so I think the big surprise, and it's a worthy thing, and the best outstanding performance by male actor is for Better Life, which is a good movie. And Damien Bichir?
Bichir,
yeah.
He'll be on the show.
That's a bold choice, and I have no problem seeing that in there.
He'll be on our show next month, actually, to talk about
it. It's a great film.
He'll be with Chris Weitz, the director.
Mm, that's wonderful. That's great. In the obviously the outstanding performance is the same female actor in the leading role is the same as the, I think the Globe's outstanding performance by a male actor in a supporting role. Now, this is where I think J. Edgar is strong. Armie Hammer's performance, I thought, was good. The other thing that is omitted, but is included here, is Nick Nolte for Warrior.
Yeah.
And that
yeah.
definitely needs to be in there.
And Nolte was omitted. Nolte was omitted for the Globes, like you said. Yeah. And Arnie Hammer was put in there in place of Albert Brooks.
Okay, now that I would take him out, but I do think he is the strength of J. Edgar. If it has any strength at all, I think that's his character. I know people would disagree with me on that, but I do think that's the heart of the movie there.
I'm all for Nick Nolte, man.
Yeah, no,
I mean,
Nick Nolte.
Even with Albert Brooks in there, I know that Albert Brooks will win, but I would vote for Nick Nolte.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
I love Christopher Plummer, and that's one of my favorite movies of the year, Beginners.
Yeah.
But
Melissa McCarthy gets it for outstanding performance by a female actor in a supporting role, and then you have Janet McTeer, Jessica Chastain, Bijou, and Spencer, who got Golden Globe nominations. Outstanding performance by a cast in a motion picture that was interesting, though. Midnight in Paris, The Help, The Descendants, Bridesmaids, and The Artist. Now, can I ask a question? Are this strictly American performances?
I mean, they're mostly American. I mean, they're, for the most part, American movies. Right?
Okay. I have to say I don't have a problem with any of these, but I would have to throw in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy in this category.
Yeah.
I really would. And even Harry Potter, just the all-around...
In terms of an ensemble working together.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's interesting. But, you could essentially nominate any Woody Allen movie in terms of an ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
Because he assembles a great ensemble in every movie. I think The Help works really well in terms of an ensemble.
Yeah, I was going to say that too. You're right.
I think The Help is going to take that award.
I think that may be where it gets its strength. I think you're right, Dean.
Yeah. I think it's going to... I mean, because, everybody walking out of The Help said, boy, everybody was good in that. You know, it's just like... And it's the hallmark of an ensemble win is when it's difficult to decide who's the lead in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of for me the hallmark of what it takes to win this award. You know, so even last year with the King's Speech winning for the ensemble award. Well, I mean, it was difficult to tell who was the lead in that movie. I mean, was it, Colin Firth or was it Jeffrey Rush?
Right.
I mean, they both had equal screen time. I mean, even though Rush eventually got nominated for supporting actor, it's only because he wasn't playing the king. It wasn't because it was really the supporting role. So, but with The Help, even when you get to Viola Davis, it was difficult to determine whether she was the supporting actress or a lead actress in that movie, and that's because it was an ensemble piece.
It's like another Viola Davis movie, Doubt. I mean,
yeah,
like with Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Best supporting actor. I mean, he was as much a lead as Amy Adams or Meryl Streep in that movie.
That was a good, the more I think about it, that's a very great performance-driven film.
I love that movie. I've always loved it out. I haven't seen it in a while, but... Critics' Choice Awards are interesting because, I mean, their Best Picture nominees are The Artist, The Descendants, Drive, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, The Help, Hugo, Midnight in Paris, Moneyball, Tree of Life, War Horse. Now, if you go by the critics and everything you read about their favorite movie of the year, it's Tree of Life. Like, overwhelmingly, the critics have chosen Tree of Life as their number one.
Well, it needs to get it somewhere, and if the critics are going to be the ones driving that, I mean, that's going to be the one doing it, because, it's interesting, is the movie never got a full theatrical release. Well, I thought it would have been risky, not risky, but ballsy, because you have Brad Pitt and Sean Penn I would have made that, given that more screen time. You know, I would have given that more screening, more bookings, because I think people would have checked it out. I think some of the stories that popped up that you saw in Drudge, oh, people wanted their money back because it wasn't the Brad Pitt film they thought it was going to be. I think you do a disservice or something like that. Regardless what you think of the film, I think it's worth going, at least checking out at least once.
I think it's miraculous that it got the release it did.
Yeah, but I mean, The New World...
favorite movie of the year, so I'm not complaining about the movie.
Right.
But
it is
just
miraculous.
Just that movie got made is miraculous, in the fashion it got made.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Also noteworthy, I mean, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close finally shows up.
Yeah, and...
Hollywood
yeah.
Reporter reviewed that today.
What did they say about it?
They said it was very moving and surprisingly literary, like literate sounding.
He is a guy who wrote that is, like, in that sense, to a lesser extent, like, you know, like Ian McEwan, who wrote Atonement and Sarity, is, you know, it's to get a movie, to be able to have that translate to screen is amazing. We'll see what happens. I'm very curious about it. Very curious about that movie.
Gosling got an actor nomination for the Critics' Choice for Drive.
Okay, cool.
Michelle Olsen got an actress nomination from the Critics. Supporting actor Patton Oswalt and Andy Serkis for Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
And I think deservingly so for that.
The Critics are on board with the motion capture.
Yeah.
No surprises with the Carrie Mulligan for Shame for supporting actress. That's different.
She got a tattoo for it, so I mean, she should get some recognition. She got a goddamn tattoo to be in the movie to get that part. I'm sorry, that made a big impression on me.
She's the best thing in the movie. She's the best thing in Shame.
Okay, Let me ask you a question, Dean. When she sings, when she's singing.
Yeah.
Did you think that was a great rendition of that song, or do you think that was painfully bad?
I think that it was on the verge of both, really.
Okay,
that was what was interesting about it.
My mom stopped laughing. She started laughing. She's like, God, her singing, it's supposed to be this bad, right? Well,
you know, it's a ridiculously slow version of that, and she kind of drains all the joy out of it. So it's kind of interesting. I thought her singing, actually, you know, her singing, like, whether she was on key or not or whatever, if you're talking about that.
Right.
I mean, she was fine.
Right, but it's just that version. I was like, oh, my God, oh, my God.
I think it's just the thing that's written into the movie to show, you know, how ambivalent she is about being exactly where she is at that moment. So,
I think that's a good point. Yeah.
But that's a terrific scene, though painful scene.
Yeah.
But I thought she was great in it. She really injected a lot of life into what I thought was a really dull movie.
Acting ensemble. Ides of March got in there for that, for the Critics. Best director, Stephen Daldry for Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, and Nicholas Winding Refn for Drive. Those are different. Best original screenplay, Win-Win.
That I'm glad to see getting some recognition. That was one of my the first movies I really enjoyed this year.
And Young Adult, and 50-50.
Cool.
Yeah,
those
that
all...
would end up getting, you know, a WGA nomination.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Best Adapted, Extremely Loud, Incredibly Close got in there. Best Animated Feature is the same across the board. No, it's not. No, it's not. There's no Cars 2, but there's a Kung Fu Panda 2.
Okay.
Maybe Kung Fu Panda drives the car. You know, maybe that. I don't know.
Wow, Critics' Choice have a Best Young Actor, Actress category. Well, these are different. Best Young Actor and Actress, Asia Butterfield for Hugo, Ellie Fanning for Super 8, Thomas Horn for Extremely Loud, Ezra Miller for We Need to Talk About Kevin, Swarish Ronan for Hannah, Shailene Woodley for The Descendants. I think it'll go to the Descendants girl, but I've heard great things about the kid from Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close,
mm-hmm,
who
yeah.
essentially has to carry the emotional weight of that movie.
Yes, he does. He does. In the book, he does.
He's obviously the lead of the movie. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Best action movie. They divide this up here. Best action movie. Drive, Fast Five, Hannah, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and Super 8.
Oh. I mean, why wouldn't you give that to Hannah? Hannah is obviously the most exciting movie out of that bunch.
I would personally give it to Mission Impossible 4.
I would say Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol is the best action movie of the year, is hands
yeah.
down. Hannah, yeah. I mean, Rise of the Planet, they're all good films. Even Fast Five is a great action film. Did you notice that was on Richard Corliss's top 10 list?
Yeah, I did notice that.
And I understand why. First of all, I think it's the first of those films that I actually enjoyed. Now, when I put it on a best of list, no, but it was enjoyable. It did what it had to do. The irony is, though, that Drive is in this category. And Drive is so much more than an action film.
I think so, too, but I think it'll win that.
I think, you know, I mean, I have no problem with it being, but I'm just saying it's just so much more than that. And I think that's the problem. The marketing of the movie is, you know, Carrie Mulligan was saying this in an interview that there's a woman who thought that she was getting another Fast and Furious and was disappointed because it wasn't anything like that. I think Drive is certainly more than an action film. I mean, it definitely has a lot of great action and some of the most astounding violence of the year outside of 13 Assassins. But I think so much more than that, but I guess that's where they're going to put it. But I agree with you, Jamie. I would put Mission Impossible as the best action film of the year, hands down.
Mm. Best comedy movie, Bridesmaids, Crazy Stupid Love, Horrible Bosses, Midnight in Paris, and The Muppets.
The Muppets is more family, I would think. But I think those first four are all great, great choices.
Well, there. Some people were angered by the Muppets being excluded from the Globes.
Oh yeah, there was an argument to be made that Muppets should have been in the comedy. I like the Muppets. I can't say I adored it, but I enjoyed it. But I don't know.
They didn't even get a best song nomination, did
that's
they?
That's what I thought. I thought that would be in there. I was really shocked that none of the songs from that movie were in there.
There's new music there in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of songs. I mean, this is a passion project for Jason Segel. He really put his heart and soul into this. He really loves the Muppets. So
what do you think here? I mean, Horrible Bosses and Crazy Bridesmaids, right?
I think it's Bridesmaids. But I love the Horrible Bosses was much better than I thought it would be, and Crazy Stupid Love really just astounded me. I really enjoyed that a lot.
I was really surprised by Crazy Stupid Love, too. I kind of count that as I don't know why, but I'm kind of counting it as sort of a guilty pleasure this year because, you know, no one else really, it didn't really seem like it captured a lot of people. But I walked into it thinking, oh, God, what am I getting into?
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed it thoroughly. Even the, you know, some of the stuff that people thought was over the top, mm-hmm. like the scene in the gym and
mm-hmm.
stuff like that.
Right, but I love how it came together again.
Yeah, I thought it was quite good.
Mm-hmm.
Best foreign language film, no Angelina Jolie among the critics here. In Darkness, Le Havre, which translated means The Havre.
Okay.
A Separation. Separation, The Skin I Live In, and Where Do We Go Now?
I think, actually, it's between A Separation and Le Havre, to be honest with you.
I think A Separation is going to take, you know, all those mm-hmm. awards.
There's no separating it from its Oscar, mm-hmm. from its awards. Best Documentary Feature, Buck, Cave of Forgotten Dreams, George Harrison, Living in the Material World, Page One, Inside the New York Times, Project NIMH, and Undefeated.
This is tough. I really like Page One a lot, but I haven't seen... and I love the George Harrison one, too. I mean, don't get me wrong. But I really love Page One. But I think it might Buck or the Cave of Forgotten Dreams.
Yeah, Cave of Forgotten Dreams has gotten really good
mm-hmm.
recognition. And Project NIMH, I'd love to see it. I mean,
it's
a fascinating documentary. And it's from the guy that did Man on Wire. I mean, it's
yeah,
his follow-up to that.
That's a strong possibility, too. I just haven't gotten a chance to see it.
I'd give it to George Harrison movie, personally.
I have no problem.
I do too.
With that.
And I think its main competition is Cave of Forgotten Dreams. But I think it'll probably go to George Harrison. But see if they did any better with Best Song. They did. Because in addition to Romeo and Juliet and The Help, they have three songs from The Muppets nominated.
Oh, cool.
That might be overkill now.
Yeah. Going from none to three.
Yeah, it's a little overkill.
I think it'll be Pacino's Dunkachino jingle that he sings.
Okay, yeah, I was waiting for you to say that.
I have that downloaded somewhere. I need to play it on the show sometime.
Oh, God.
By
the
way, I wanted to ask you guys this to see if you knew this. Was that song that the, you know, in Moneyball, the song that the daughter sings in that movie? Is that an original song?
I don't think so. I don't think it is.
It isn't?
No, I don't. Okay. I think that is a cover. I think. I'm not positive. I just sort of remember.
Okay.
Best score, The Artist, Drive. Drive got a nomination here for Cliff Martinez. Mm-hmm. Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Hugo, and War Horse.
Those are all. That's a tough one, man.
Cinematography. God. The Artist, Drive, Hugo, Tree of Life, and War Horse.
Tree of Life.
Tree of Life is winning.
That's where it's gonna get. That's where I think it's gonna. That's where it needs. That's where, and it does deserve that.
You know, this year there are two award winners that are complete locks, and that is Emmanuel Lubezki for cinematography for Tree of Life, and Dante Ferretti for art direction for Hugo. You can pretty much throw those up.
Well, art direction is where this group gave Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 a nomination.
Well,
alongside the artist, Hugo, Tree of Life, and War Horse. War Horse. Gotta be careful saying that. Best editing.
Horse saying War Horse.
Best editing, The Artist, Drive, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Hugo, War Horse. War Horse.
War Horse.
War Horse.
War Horse.
I just want Sean Connery to announce a category that has War Horse in it. That's all I want. And the nominations for Best Art Direction, War Horse. And the whole front row will be covered in spittle. Best Costume Design, The Artist, The Help, Hugo, Jane Eyre, My Week with Marilyn.
Oh, God, give Jane Eyre something. Give it that. I mean,
I'm surprised to see, you know, I think that when the Oscars come around talking about costumes here, they always pick something very unusual. So I think we're going to see something like, you know, the Immortals come in there or the Mill.
I think with Oscars,
I think
the WE, this could be the one nomination for the Oscars that movie gets.
Yeah. Also, Anonymous.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that's
Anonymous,
right.
Anonymous looked like it had amazing costumes in it.
Best makeup. Aubert Knobs, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, The Iron Lady, J. Edgar, My Week with Marilyn.
I mean, that's a toss-up. Yeah, it really is a toss-up.
They tend to go with
really
old. They tend to go with old age, though, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, the J. Edgar. I mean, the makeup. I mean, they put a fucking pound of it on each actor, but how it's used, like, to create the illusion of older age. I mean, just the purpose of it doesn't that give it like a heads up or
that
a leg
might,
up.
That might. I think you.
Even if it's not great.
It's weird, though. I mean, what they did in J. Edgar was strange. They didn't. They gave Leonardo DiCaprio a fat head, but they didn't give him a fat body. So he has a fat head.
Yeah. Well, that's because they were inspired by Dick Tracy. But they, actually, he does have a gut at the end.
Yeah, that's true.
I didn't see it. They didn't really make it very pronounced, you know.
Best visual effects. Leonardo DiCaprio's gut and J. Edgar. Harry Potter, The Deathly Hallows Part 2. Hugo, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Super 8, The Tree of Life.
I go with Rise of the Planet of the Apes, actually.
That's what's eventually going to win, but wouldn't it be great if Tree of Life won?
That would be something. Yeah.
He still wouldn't come on our show.
He won't go to any of these award ceremonies either. Terrence Malick. I mean, you know, if you nominate him, he ain't going to be around to pick anything up. Best sound: Harry Potter, Hugo, Super 8, Tree of Life, War Horse.
Oh, it could be any of those. I mean,
yeah.
It's interesting that Tree of Life made it into the sound categories.
Yeah, since everybody complains that you don't hear the dialogue.
Yeah.
The movie.
That's a very fascinating nomination there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
so good. Super 8 had great sound in it.
Yeah, it did. I mean, the creative decisions made in that movie weren't very sound, but
no,
the actual sound itself was good.
Yeah.
All right, so
all right. Well,
we went through all those nominations.
Okay.
I'm exhausted.
Yeah, I know,
me too.
Oh,
excuse me. All right, so Jerry, when are you going to see The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo?
I'm going to try Tuesday or Wednesday. I mean, I'm going to try my best, so.
Okay. Well, if you try really hard, we can come back Wednesday, and then it'll be our last show before Christmas, obviously.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, I'll do the best I can.
So we can talk about it, and then apparently Aaron's got an interview he's recorded that we can play.
Okay, that sounds good.
With the guy that wrote that book of interviews with Clint Eastwood, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I think so. Okay, so that's what's coming up, and then after Christmas we have a cinematography series, and we have our best. We're going to reveal our top 10 of the year. We're going to do that show early January.
Okay.
So look for like the Sunday after the New Year's Day,
mm-hmm.
which would be the 8th?
Yeah, I think the 8th or something like that, yeah.
Okay, January 8th. Mark it on your calendar. The Movie Geeks count down their top 10 best of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, are you in for that, Dean?
Yes, I'm totally in.
All right. And I don't have any great movie scores to close out the show with. So I'll close out with the same awful song that I played last week.
Okay, sounds good.
Oh, my God, what was it?
It's terrible. It is the worst movie song ever written. I don't even know the guy's name. It's Frank Marx or something. It's the song from Arthur.
Okay, there you go.
Milk and cookies.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, let's do it. Let's go. Let's do it. All right. All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Stick around, Dee, to hear the song, okay?
All right.
Okay. Good night. Bye bye.
Good night. What's on my mind?